tract homes that once stood. Four of the Ville's original streetlight poles still stood more or less upright, their gutted sockets trailing pigtails of severed power cords. The poles cast long, crooked shadows over the jumbled roofs of rusting corrugated metal. Moonboy had once prided itself as a pure norm Ville, which meant that it was always open season on muties, or suspected muties, who happened to wander by. It was the kind of place that accumulated human trash like the corner of a back alley. Hopeless marginals, over-the-hill blackhearts, inbred droolers, assorted triple stoops, swirled randomly around Deathlands for years, only to wind up in this or some similar Blind Canyon graveyard. With their backs to the wall, literally, at the end of the road, literally, they could tell lies in the shade and safely rot. Or so they had thought. Unfortunately for them, the first expeditionary force from the parallel universe had made Earthfall smack in the middle of the Ville's main street. The drunken residents had mistaken their black battle suits for some kind of muty insect shell and had opened fire in a wild free-for-all. After easily subduing Moonboy's inhabitants, Colonel Gabhart and his crew examined the survivors for brain viruses and inheritable mutation-caused disorders. Ironically, all the so-called pure norms were incurably diseased. A quick survey told Ryan that no one had moved into the vacant hut since he and the companions had been there last. That didn't surprise him much. Even in broad daylight, Moonboy had a bad feel to it. It wasn't just deserted, it was tainted, spoiled. And if there were no visible signs of life below, there were still plenty of visible signs of death. Since Ryan knew what to look for, he could find them even at a distance of 600 yards. They were nestled in protected places where the chem rain couldn't wash them away, under the collapsed roofs of lean-tos, inside the doorways of hammered-down hovels. And if a passing would-be squatter didn't realize what the oblong brown blotches in the dirt signified, one whiff of the sick sweet stench that hung over the Ville like an evil fog would be clue enough. Because Colonel Gabhart was afraid of contagious diseases spreading to his crew, he'd used carnifage foam on the dead and dying to sterilize the place. Ryan had witnessed the foam in action. He could still remember the way the canny had squealed as he tried to drag himself out from under the mounds of ravening microorganisms, as muscle and bone dissolved into a brown liquid that apparently even wild animals wouldn't touch. The pervasive odor of decay had forced Gabhart and the rest of his team to make their permanent camp a good distance from the massacre site, on the farthest edge of the faint gridwork of the development streets. That was where Ryan and the others had left them. The camp was still there, but nobody was home.
It looks like our friends have already moved on, J.B.
Question is, where did they go?
And did they go willingly?
No way of figuring that out from up here, Christy. If we check the arroyo, we can see if they dug up the gyroplane and chilling gear. That'd tell us something.
Walk across canyon, no good.
His red eyes glittering, Jack raised an arm and pointed around the top of the rim.
Hides for shooters. Go down. Bastard crossfire.
He's right. Once we're in the middle of the canyon floor, we've got nowhere to run. All the enemy has to do is seal off the mouth and start pushing us back. We'll end up pinned against the canyon's rear wall, facing a firing squad.
Can't argue with that, Mildred. Well, I'm going to go check the arroyo. Anybody wants to stay here, that's okay.
It was mid-morning by the time they had all descended the rim and safely crossed the canyon. The burial spot was in a dry creek bed that followed the sweeping S-curve of the canyon wall. From a long way off, they could make out the hatching of black scorch marks on the rock face. As they got closer, they could see the deep cuts in its surface.
By the three Kennedys.
The creek bed looked as if it had been systematically dynamited. It was an obstacle course of scattered mounds and deep pits of discolored dirt. The chaparral and sagebrush that had lined the dry channel was uprooted and fire-blackened.
Some of the gear's been dug up, that's for sure.
Not gefado.
Jack bent and picked up a half-buried piece of black armored material, the end of which was shredded into a fan of stiff fibers.
That's part of a gyroplane's main rotor.
More pieces of it are scattered all over the place, but they're a lot smaller than that. Looks to me like it absorbed a direct hit from a missile.
Another gyroplane landed and took off over here. And look at these wheel marks.
Big suckers. About a yard wide and, what, 18-inch imprints. Maybe three wags. And from the boot prints all around, 25 or so ground troops.
Spread out and let's see what else we can find.
They fanned out along the edge of the disturbed area, and then set off in a search line across the creek beds on natural ups and downs. It quickly became clear that all of the Otherworld battle gear had been recovered, but not by whom or why.
Hey! Look here!
When the others joined Dean, he was standing on the edge of a blast crater. He stared down at a black, gauntleted hand and arm sticking out of the sand. Mildred nudged it with her boot, and it toppled over. It was severed at the elbow. She picked it up by the wrist.
A laser cut?
They all gathered around for a better look at the stump end of the grisly relic. The battlesuit material had been sliced through cleanly.
I think so, Millie.
An Achilles heel. It would appear that our foes can be harmed by their own terrific weaponry. Their armor is not so invincible after all.
Something else there.
Jack hopped into the bottom of the pit.
What do you have down there, Jack?
Jack climbed out.
Yeah. Helmet, maybe.
The teen was carrying the lower half of a battlesuit helmet. It had been cut twice crosswise by a laser beam, once at the neck where it had joined the suit's collar, and again just below the point where the wearer's nose would have been. The upper part of the helmet, the visor, and the wearer's skull were missing, perhaps carried off by some animal. He showed them a red brimless cap with the word 5 stitched on the front.
This too.
Mildred took the cap from him and examined it more closely. The inside was caked with dried blood.
This was Ackerman's, Gavhart systems engineer. It looks like at least one of our friends didn't go back to the dark side.
Where's the rest of him, though?
Let's keep looking.
They never did find Ackerman's body, or even his head, but a few minutes later they came across another corpse. It, too, was missing numerous parts. Pedro Highlander had been the biologist. His armless, legless, battlesuit-clad torso sat propped up against some boulders at the base of the canyon wall. He was without a helmet, and the vultures had been at him. They'd emptied his eye sockets and torn off his lips and cheeks. Fat black flies crawled over his ruined face.
Damn. He was still alive when the birds got him.
How do you know that?
Look at the blood on his chest plate, John. His heart was still pumping when they tore it out.
They could have at least chilled him. They must have messed him up like that and then let him die slow for a reason.
Could have been payback because Gabhart's team went renegade, or because they fought back when they were found.
Ryan stepped over to the cliff to examine the score marks on the rock face more closely. Up to this point, he'd only seen the laser weapons cut through thin material. From the shallow gouges in the sandstone, it appeared there were limits to their penetrating power. The beams removed a few inches of rock at a time, but couldn't cut through more than that in a single swipe. His curiosity satisfied, he surveyed the battlefield again. After a minute or two, he gave the others his conclusions.
It looks to me like Gabhart and the others had some advanced warning. They could have seen the satellite track across the sky like we did. Or maybe they spotted the troops at a distance, or came across their wheel marks and knew what they meant. Whatever. Wherever they were, whatever they were doing, they had enough time to get back here and recover some of their gear before the enemy showed up. We know at least two of them got into their battle suits.
They must have put up a hell of a fight, but it doesn't look like they did any damage to the opposition.
Even if they'd gotten all their gear up and running, they still didn't stand a chance. They were cornered, and then hit by a combined air and ground attack.
How long ago did it happen, Jack?
The albino brushed aside the surface of one of the blast pits until he came to damp sand.
2 days. Maybe less. Not more.
And from the boot tracks, we know the unit that hit them was around 25 strong, 3 wags, and at least 1 gyro. It could have been a roving scout force, but it's hard to believe that their finding our friends was an accident. There's just too much country to hide in around here. Seems to me the attackers had to have scanned them from satellite, or they left sensors here that got tripped when Gabhart and the others came back to pick up their battle gear.
The companions had already encountered some of this remote sensing technology. They were surrounded by a terrain littered with loose rocks of various sizes, any one of which might have been a camouflaged motion or sound detector.
Correct me if I am wrong, my dear Ryan, but if your assumption is valid, then the die is already cast. In all likelihood, the enemy has tracked us here in exactly the same manner.
Afraid so.
Which means that even as we speak, they are probably on their way to intercept us.
Probably.
After they'd all crossed the creek bed again, J.B. took another look at the tire tracks.
The opposition didn't make camp after the assault. They just hit and get. From the tracks, it looks like they towed the missile gantry truck out of the hole we dug and drove it away with them.
We better get a move on. If we head out the canyon mouth, we can see which way they came from.
Point.
As the companion started to follow Jack, Ryan put a hand on Dean's shoulder.
Wait a second, son. We need to talk.
Yeah, Dad?
Now listen close, boy. Our situation's very bad here, and it looks like it's only going to get worse.